You got to get some positive yards here just so you can punt the ball from a normal distance.
Manning on third and 10. He fires, and the catch is made by Cruz, who breaks free. One man to beat. Victor Cruz down the sideline. Cruz is going to take it all the way, tying an NFL record. 99 yards from Manning to Cruz.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, we're back. Another episode. Ethan and Young Dizzy here with you once again. I'm here with Ryan Dizier. Weiss is off on his honeymoon. Before we get into all things preseason football, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Ryan at Ryan Dizier. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Always remember to follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. So smash that motherfucking subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars. Tell us good things. Tell us we sound great or that we look pretty. And last but not least, our first sponsor of today's episode is actually us, Gotham SN. It is sponsored by our Patreon page. Now, Diz, what can you buy for a dollar?
You can buy, in this economy, some candy. You can buy a water, depending on where you are. A slice of pizza in New York.
You can, boom. That's a prime example. You get a dollar slice. You can get some candy at the store. You get a water that some homeless guy is selling you on the street, and you always got to check that cap, make sure it's a fresh bottle. You can get a lot for $1, even in New York City. You know what else you can get with a dollar? You can get a Saquon Barkley jersey. You can get an Eli Manning jersey. Because all you need to do is go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/GothamSN, and show your support to all your favorite GSN personalities, whether it be me, Diz, Claudio, Fitz, Woj, Dylan, too many to name. For $1, you can support us, help us keep the lights on, and for each dollar you donate, you get an entry to win the jersey of your choice once we hit our first goal. So make sure you go to patreon.com/GothamSN. Show us your support. We love you guys, and we hope you keep listening. That is it for the housekeeping. Diz, what's cracking?
Not much. It's been a while since I've been on the pod, so thanks for having me back. And I don't know, I've been saying this all offseason and preseason, but since the Giants stunk so much last year, it feels like this offseason has been lasting for years. And it's good that week three is coming up in the preseason, so we can finally get a good look at the starters and see where the team actually is, so we can see if they'll be competitive or not.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's been a long offseason and the Giants stunk last year. It's funny enough because neither of us really expect them to be anything more than mediocre average at best this year. So, you know, long offseason for a better but not great result. We got a lot to get into. Obviously, the Lions game this past week. Before we get into all that, some news dropped today about Victor Cruz. Unintentional rhyme there. Victor Cruz retiring and will now be, what is he working for? NFL Network, ESPN, one of those networks.
I think ESPN.
Officially hanging them up. Giants legend. And surprisingly, most of the takes were good. Surprisingly, there was very, very little hate towards Victor Cruz today. Let us hear your thoughts on Cruz retiring and his time as a Giant.
I just think that, I mean, the story obviously has been talked about so much and deservedly so, but going from, I believe he dropped out of college a couple times. I know
he had some trouble with class with his grades.
He did horribly on the SATs, which I know I can relate to, but going to UMass, which is such a small school, going undrafted, you know, having that huge preseason game against the Jets in 2010, suffering an injury and then coming back 2011 was pretty bad the first two weeks. And then week three against the Eagles really just exploded onto the scene, really helped key that Giants offense to the 2011 Super Bowl. And I mean, there are just so many memorable plays and moments from his career, which is so crazy to me because he was really only like that prominent and a superstar for three seasons, but everything in his career was so compact. And so like, you want to talk about obviously 99er touchdown, the walk-off against the Redskins, the game against the Bucks. He just had so many memorable moments, and he really was Odell Beckham Jr. before Odell Beckham Jr. was Odell Beckham Jr. in terms of superstardom. So seeing him retire, kind of upsetting, but obviously he's going to a great opportunity, and it's just good that he was able to suit up again for the Giants in 2016, whereas it looked like maybe he maybe not ever had a chance to, given his injuries.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points, and I don't think there's really been, I mean, we can bring up a lot of examples, and you know, obviously the NFL average NFL career length is only what, 2.5 seasons, 3 max. So for a guy like Cruz, who, again, everyone knows the story, undrafted kid from Paterson, New Jersey, right in the backyards of the Meadowland, to, you know, have such a big rise to fame. I mean, that 99-yard touchdown against the Jets single-handedly propelled them, gave them that momentum to make that Super Bowl run. Super Bowl champ, Pro Bowler, 1,500-yard, 9-touchdown season, followed by a 1,000, basically an 1,100-yard, 10-touchdown season. He will go down as a Giant great. Now, he won't go down as an all-time NFL great. And this is where I don't think that there's much controversy here, but as much as I love him, Victor Cruz does not belong in the Giants Ring of Honor. I just got to throw it out there.
Correct. That's a correct take, because if you want to...
Is that a correct opinion? That is a correct opinion. Okay, good. I'm glad we both share correct opinions. Yes.
Yeah. Because if you want to like just break down his 3 years with the Giants in terms of how good he was, I don't think that's enough. Like, that would be like if Antonio Pierce were in the ring. Like, he was really good for a brief spell, but right. I don't think like a long time great, whereas like OC and Tuck and Strahan and guys like that. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with that.
Yeah. Now, one thing that had me real curious is just sort of where he stood in terms of all-time New York Giants receivers. And I don't know why I was shocked to find this out, because I feel like the New York Giants haven't had, you know, like an all-time great receiver. Amani Toomer is still the New York Giants' leading receiver now.
Which is crazy.
Insane. And he doesn't even have 10,000 yards. Now, given our hope and the likelihood of an Odell Beckham Jr. extension, he will one day sit atop those rankings. But, you know, if a guy like Amani Toomer, who has led the Giants in all-time receiving yards, is the only wide receiver in the, I guess, real wide receiver in the Giants Ring of Honor, I don't think that Cruz's flash in the pan 2 seasons really gets him in there.
Yeah, correct. And I think that, I mean, that is just such a crazy thing that Amani Toomer,
right.
And I know you've talked about this before, we're like, all right, in terms of like dominance, probably Plaxico, but Amani Toomer for longevity. And I mean, that is wild, but no, I think Cruz will always go down as a very respected member of the Giants organization and someone fans will always relate to, regardless of where he is in terms of his career post football. But I don't think he has done enough to warrant a spot in the Ring of Honor. I think he's kind of like on the cusp. Maybe if he had 2 more, like close to 1,000 yards, then absolutely a lock. But and people forget that in 2011, and this I might get slammed for this, but he wasn't the number one receiver. Hakeem Nicks was able to draw a lot of double coverage, and that's what really freed Cruz up. So,
I've said this before, it is a fucking shame that we never got to see prime Cruz with Odell.
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
Damn shame.
Yeah.
But that 99-yard touchdown run and 200 affairs has got to put him in you know, some sort of Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I would agree with that. Is that your favorite play from his career with the Giants, the 99-yard TD?
I mean, it's up there. I feel like that's the go-to for everyone. But when he mossed Nnamdi Asamoah against the Eagles and just made him look like a child, how many times was that in one game? 2 or 3?
Yeah.
It was 3 touchdowns against the Eagles, or was it 2?
It was 2. It was 2
touchdowns against the Eagles.
I think 3 catches, too, which is absurd.
Yeah, he just mossed Nnamdi Asamoah, who was like the big offseason signing for the Eagles. Was that the Eagles' dream team?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah. That got to be up there. I think that's it. My cop out answer is the 99-yard touchdown, which is going to be everyone's answer. But that game against the Eagles will probably be my number one. What about yours?
I think the walk off against the Skins, because that was the RG3 superstar year. And mm-hmm. I thought, all right, wow, we're really going to lose to Washington here. It was early in the season, like week 7. And then that happened. And it was just kind of a testament to like how explosive he was out of this slot. So congrats on a great career to Team Vic. Really nice guy too.
Yeah, great guy. One other thing. This is just from me perusing that New York Giants all-time receivers list. The Plaxico stats are just ridiculous. For the short amount of time that he played with the Giants, he had 3,681 receiving yards and 33 touchdowns.
Easy.
That is 111 yards per touchdown compared to Amani Toomer, who's the all-time leading receiver, 175 yards per touchdown. Just insane. I mean, we lament over it all the time, but the Giants absolutely go back-to-back if Plaxico doesn't shoot himself.
Oh, yeah, and people forget that. I don't think he practiced in 2008 either. I know in 2007.
He legitimately didn't practice. He was that good. He was like, oh, my ankle sort of hurts. I'm just going to maintain during the week and then just dominate during the season.
Yeah, he was a rare breed, man. 6'5" and could run like 4'5". Yeah. That he was like, I'm not going to say the same kind of player as Calvin Johnson, but the same body type, I'll say.
Yo, definitely.
Yeah.
Let's get into the Detroit Lions, some guys that stood out. We can start with the quarterbacks, obviously, because that's what, at least based on last episode, if you guys are listening, that is what my prime, that's what I was keeping an eye on last week. Obviously, Davis Webb looked like doo-doo in his, you know, in his snaps. He looked way better this past week. So did Kyle LaLetta. What are your thoughts on the quarterback battle? And do you expect Davis Webb to maintain the QB2 role, or do you think we'll see Kyle LaLetta surpass him?
So that's really interesting. I was doing something today, just kind of like things to watch in the third preseason game, and I think it really depends on whom you ask of like which quarterback has like the lead to be Eli's backup, the primary.
And someone asked me after the game this past week. They said, "Who do you think looked better?" And I really didn't have an answer because they both have such different looks to them. I might give it to LaLetta by a little bit, a little bit, and that's not to take away anything from Davis Webb. Listen, we trash the Davis Webb truthers all the time. You know, he looks great in shorts. Davis Webb looked legitimately good out there. Legitimately good. He finished with a 78.5 overall Pro Football Focus grade, which was fourth among quarterbacks. He had a passer rating of 106, and he completed two of his four deep passes to both Shepherds. 27-yard and a 40-something yard. And he looked good going deep.
Yeah, absolutely. That one ball he had where he pump faked left and then just dropped a dime to Russell Shepherd. That was unbelievable. But no, I would agree with that. I think LaLetta, I mean, in the first game, LaLetta didn't do anything like that badly.
Right.
He was just unspectacular. Exactly. And I think at the end of the day, especially for like Pat Shurmur's offense, they're going to kind of put accuracy over arm strength. And if LaLetta continues to just do all the right things, where Davis Webb's going to take a lot of chances, which is great. Because you want a guy who's not afraid to give his guys a chance. Yeah, exactly. But I think that LaLetta showed, especially his mobility. He tore a guy's ACL.
He literally juked the guy out of his ACL. Poor one out.
Yeah. Like, I think I've been really impressed with LaLetta because the word coming out of the draft when they took him was, oh, he could be really good. But then in camp, he struggled a lot. People said his arm strength, but he's impressed me a lot. But I mean, Davis Webb, we can take nothing away from him, regardless of how terrible the offseason takes were. I think it says a lot about his psyche that he was able to be horrendous in the first game, come out in week two of the preseason against the Lions, played pretty well. He actually played really well. So I think that's definitely something to keep an eye on, obviously. But if I were a betting man and you asked me right now, I would give the edge to LaLetta.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really, really good point about accuracy in Shurmur's offense. We saw that with some of the guys that he's worked with over the course of his coaching career. You know, none of these guys were big gunslingers, right? It's just accuracy. And Shurmur can do a lot with a little, I'll say. One of the things that I was looking forward to in the second half of the game was, you know, Davis Webb comes out there after his bad start. And really what I'm getting at is the mental fortitude of both of these guys. David, you brought it up. Davis Webb coming off a really, really bad start where everyone was looking to see what this guy can do. What does he do? He goes 14 for 20, 140 yards, a touchdown. Then I go to myself, okay, that's great. Like you said, LaLetta looked unspectacular, didn't do anything to really impress. Let's see how he reacts to Davis Webb coming out there. There were some mistakes, but he immediately made up for them. He displayed his mobility. He overthrew a guy, and we're talking about LaLetta's accuracy and how he's got such a nice touch on the ball. missed a wide open receiver. What does he do the very next snap? Steps up in the pocket and just guns one into a really tight window. Very, very impressed with what I saw out of both quarterbacks and how they both responded to not only mediocre and bad week ones, but how they reacted in game to the competition that they're providing each other.
Yeah, and this is really, if you're a Giants fan and if you're just the Giants in general, this is best case scenario. You want these two young bucks to go out and both perform well and give the team more than one option. This is a completely best case ideal scenario for them to continue to play well. And at the very least, next offseason, maybe trade one of them. Like, there are just so many options that get opened up. And like, it goes back to the pre-draft thing where people said, oh, why would the Giants take a quarterback? It's like, in a league, this isn't like the NBA where pretty much every team has a good, competent point guard. The NFL is devoid of good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So if you're the Giants and you see Davis Webb and Kyle Lauletta continue to go through the preseason looking competent to good, that just gives the team so many options moving forward. So I've been very pleased with the way that they both played in week two.
But even then, you know, and not that this is a comparable situation, but you could end up with a Redskins situation, an RG3 Kirk Cousins situation where, fuck it, you keep two really good quarterbacks on the roster in case one is a flash in the pan, one gets injured. Or you can go the Patriots route where you have, you know, a really good guy in Jimmy Jesus sitting behind Tom Brady and get decent draft capital for him. So, you know, it's good to have what's the phrase I'm looking for? Something of riches?
Oh, a plethora.
Sure, a plethora of riches. So really, really nice things out of both backup quarterbacks. Curious to see how, I mean, not that he's got to worry about it, but curious to see how Eli responds because, you know, some of the things that we've seen, you know, video highlight wise from some of the beat reporters in camp, it's like, you know, he's looking sort of underwhelming, but, you know, again, we've come to sort of expect that at this point in his career.
One more final thought. Yeah, I don't think, and this is brought up every offseason by every beat reporter, but I don't think I can ever remember a good preseason he's had. So, yeah. So hopefully he'll shake it off.
Let's talk. Where do you want to move next? You want to stay with the offense or should we go studs and duds?
I think we should talk about the offensive line and how it looked because week one was still pretty shaky. How did you think they fared against Detroit?
I mean, again, this is what we're going to come to expect from the offensive line. The left side performed way better than they did in preseason week one. And that right side of Omame and Ereck Flowers is going to continue to be a nightmare, especially. And that's the thing. If one of them goes down with an injury, it's not like the backups are much better, you guys, right? We see Ereck Flowers continue to just get bull rushed, bad form. He almost ended Davis Webb's touchdown drive before it could even begin. He looks terrible. Omame, there's a reason the Jaguars let him go, right? There's a reason the Jaguars let him go. So I feel like we're beating a dead horse at this point. It's going to be the right side of the offensive line. It's going to be whether Jalapio or Jones emerges as the starting center. It's going to be the right side. God forbid one of Solder or Hernandez goes down with an injury. The Giants are absolutely fucked.
So, yeah, even though the right side of the line is obviously alarmingly concerning, the left side still isn't that good either. I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but I agree with what Ben McAdoo said about Nate Solder, that he's not that good, but he's exactly what the team needs in terms of they just needed a competent left tackle. And Will Hernandez is a rookie, and I think people are expecting a lot out of him.
I agree.
And it kind of goes back to what Pat Shurmur said yesterday or 2 days ago about how the team will go as far as the offensive line will take them. And I think that is completely true. And, I mean, so far this preseason has been literally what we expected. The left side is holding its own. The right side is failing miserably consistently.
I mean, the only – and it's funny because I want to say that Shurmur is wrong in his own assessment. The Vikings didn't have a very good offensive line last year.
Correct.
And yeah, they were still pretty good on offense.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a big component as to why the Giants brought in Shurmur is because he was able to scheme around it. And I know now that he's gone, the Vikings offense is going to take a huge hit. And at the same token, 2015, and obviously that's or 2016, that's an anomaly of a year, but the offensive line was horrendous, and the Giants were able to win off the heroics of Odell Beckham. But I do think that if the team wants to run the ball as much as it's preaching that it does with Saquon Barkley now in tow. They need to be able to, and granted, the offensive line has done a much better job run blocking than I expected, so hopefully they can just hold their own in pass protection.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was going to play devil's advocate for a minute, and you know, even though Flowers and Omame stink out loud in pass protection, their run blocking is going to be okay, and it helps when you have a back like Saquon Barkley and Wayne Gallman behind them.
Yeah, Wayne Gallman has been terrific this preseason. I'm really impressed.
Let's move into running backs then. I don't get it, man. I really don't. There's just seem to be some people out there that for whatever reason just can't admit to themselves that the John Stewart contract is an abomination. And for so many reasons. Now, do I think that John Stewart's contract is the only thing preventing the Giants from going out there and getting another cornerback or getting another a swing tackle, which they're going to need? Because let's be real here, Chad Wheeler is not coming off the bench and providing Eli Manning with any more blindside protection or, you know, anything in the run game. It just blows my mind that, you know, okay, you lose Jerry Reese. Outside of Jerry Reese, you still have John Mara at the top, you still have Kevin Abrams in the front office, and you have Dave Gettleman, who was with the organization for 13 fucking years. It was maybe not 13, maybe it was 12. A long time. He was with them a long time. The philosophy in the organization is still old and stuck in their ways. And there's nothing that exemplifies that more than Dave Gettleman coming out and saying that John Stewart hasn't lost a step. You don't even need to deep dive into some really fancy analytics to prove otherwise. You look at the yards per carry, the opportunity, the fact that the Panthers selected a running back in the first round 2 years ago. John Stewart is washed up. No one was jumping, going nuts to sign him. And the contract just stinks. He serves no purpose. Maybe it was you who made the joke. It would seem like the way that people talk about his mentorship, that Saquon Barkley is some sort of troubled youth. It makes no goddamn sense why he's on this roster, and he's going to take away a valuable roster spot from someone like Robert Martin or Jalen Simmons.
This is the worst signing I can recall ever from the Giants, and I say that, like, I don't even think that's exaggeration. Jonathan Stewart was never even that good. He had a 1,000-yard rushing season back in 2009,
yep.
And he was never really, D'Angelo Williams was more of the feature back in Carolina. Jonathan Stewart has been exponentially declining since 2014. His yards per carry has gone from 4.6 to 4.1 to 3.8 to 3.4 last year, and if you want to just eliminate a 60-yard touchdown that was just kind of a whatever, like, it would look a lot worse.
Yep.
And I'm looking at the contracts right now, and here are just some other free agent veteran running backs who are making less than Jonathan Stewart. Chris Ivory, LeGarrette Blount, CJ Anderson, Jeremy Hill, Doug Martin, Darren Sproles,
all of whom were signed after John Stewart.
Yeah, and I think if you want to look at an organization that knows how to build a team properly, the Philadelphia Eagles, they signed Darren Sproles to a very team-friendly contract, and he's a guy who rushes the ball, catches the ball, returns the ball. Jonathan Stewart's a guy who's going to be Rashad Jennings at his very worst and just run into guards' backsides and fall over for one-yard gains.
He's going to get familiar with Patrick Omame's cheeks.
Yeah, it's just like, and going back to the thing with the offensive line, like, it's exactly what we expected, though. We all knew, save for one or two people on Twitter, everyone knew this was a terrible signing from the get-go.
There's and this goes back into the general philosophy that I hold and one of the reasons that I was against the Saquon Barkley pick, but even goes further to when you go to sign backs in free agency. You can find guys who can do more than John Stewart as UDFAs. Robert Martin was the Rutgers backup, and he's making a name for himself in the Giants camp and Giants preseason right now. These guys are so replaceable. It's a position that statistically is more injured than other skill positions. Just look at the draft class right now. Saquon Barkley, tweaked hamstring. Out pretty much the rest of camp, although we hope to see him in preseason. I would just keep him in bubble wrap. Saquon Barkley tweaked hamstring. Rashad Penny has already had surgery on his hand. Sonny Michel, first round pick, which even for the Patriots is confusing because you're going to use him as like a gadget sort of player. That's fine, but the Patriots have historically just found running back production for with cheap free agents or late in the draft or undrafted free agents. Sonny Michel has knee issues already. I'm sure there's other running backs who have been drafted. I mean, even Kerryon Johnson, he's not hurt. He's been underwhelming, although people do expect him to seize the job later in the season. It's a very replaceable position. It's a position that suffers from a lot of injuries. And the Dave Gettleman signing of Jon Stewart, for those Seinfeld fans out there, it reminds me of when Kramer is like negotiating with the coffee company. And within 3 seconds of them opening up their offer, he goes, "I'll take it." Like that just seems like Jon Stewart's agent walked into the room with Dave Gettleman and was just like, "So we're looking for $2.6 million. I'll take it." And like the agent was going to finish out like over 3 or 4 years, so the cap hit would have been minimal. You know, like that sort of thing. It just doesn't make any sense, man. And like the emergence of Wayne Gallman as the second running back, as a pass catcher, as a guy who has shown that he can do it in between the tackles too, it just makes that signing all the more frustrating the further we get into camp.
Yeah, absolutely. And Wayne Gallman was a guy, and just, you know, going back to pre-draft thoughts, was a reason I was comfortable with taking a quarterback over Sego. He looked good last year, but behind a terrible offensive line. I think he averaged 4.4, showed good burst, good vision. So I'm not surprised that he's performing well either. And just the worst part, aside from the financial burden that Jonathan Stewart provides the team,
he's going to take
away from Simmons or Martin, and that's a real, real bummer, especially if you're one of them, because, I mean, obviously the world isn't fair, but that just sucks.
Yep.
Like, this old, aging, not good running back who was at his prime was just an average back, that's got to suck.
Not only that, because the Giants are having issues finding a legitimate kick and punt returner. I mean, not that Simmons or Martin would really get a crack at that job, but maybe you bring in a running back instead who's capable of those duties. One other standout for me on the offense, Jarrell Adams, didn't look good preseason one, looked pretty good preseason two. Pro Football Focus stats have him averaging 10.1 yards per reception, 96.9 passer rating when targeted, finished 3.44 yards per route, which was third among tight ends during week two of the preseason. So good to see that. You know, while we all expect Evan Engram to dominate, the Giants do have someone, you know, on the bench who's capable of not only blocking, but being sort of a big body that the Giants can target on third downs and in the red zone.
Yeah, I've actually been I've been more impressed and I've liked what I've seen out of Russell Shepard, because when the Giants brought him in, I kind of thought it was in the same vein as Jonathan Stewart, like, oh my God, Dave Gettleman mm-hmm. just giving an old Carolina Panther a home. But he's actually gone out and made plays in practice a lot. So I've been pleasantly surprised. And I think that he, along with Cody Lattimore and then Odell and Shep, are the four locks to make the team.
Definitely. Any other notes on the offense before we move to the defense?
No, I think we touched on everything for the most part.
Perfect. Before we get into the defense, we have a sponsor for today's episode. It is not the Gotham SN Patreon, which you should all check out. It is posterburner.com. Same sponsor from last week. You guys all saw the dope Odell Beckham poster that I got put up right next to my David Tyree helmet catch poster. You just want something nice to come home to. You want to look on that wall. You had a bad day at work. You come home. You're like, hey, you know what? End of the day, I'm a Giants fan. And I got a Super Bowl and I got Odell Beckham on my roster. We all have the photos that we take. We put them on Instagram. We put them on Facebook. And that's all great. But when you have that perfect picture and you want to turn it into something amazing, you take it to posterburner.com. Posterburner.com. It's easy. It's affordable and unreal quality. I can vouch for this myself because I have the poster. It took me less than 5 minutes on the website to complete. High quality. You can get a 24x36 movie poster for under $20. That's pretty big. It's great size. They also have canvas prints, metal prints, decals, stickers. What have you? Guys, if you haven't already, go check out posterburner.com. If you go to posterburner.com/GothamSN, you'll get an additional 10% off your order, and that discount applies to everything. You want a dope frame on that picture? Boom, the 10% applies. You want a metal print? Boom, the 10% applies. So go to posterburner.com/GothamSN and get that print today. Diz, let's get into the defensive side of the ball. overall, really, really good things. I mean, we nitpick when it comes to the offense. Obviously, the running back depth, you know, the right side of the offensive line, some good out of the Davis Webb and Kyle Lauletta battles. I really, really like what I'm seeing, not only out of James Betcher's defense, but James Betcher. When you look at him on the sidelines, that man is fired the fuck up after every big play. That's the sort of energy the Giants have been lacking on the sidelines, you know, out of the days of Steve Spagnuolo's, you know, blank face and Ben McAdoo looking confused, looking at a diner menu. We finally have some animation on the sideline. In terms of the defense, all good stuff. I mean, the obvious place to start is with Kerry Wynn, who, again, is just has emerged as a first ballot preseason Hall of Famer. The guy has just been absolutely unstoppable in the preseason. A lot of people were confused as to how a player of his size, right? He's sort of a bigger end, maybe a little bit smaller than an Olivier Vernon, but how he was going to fit into James Betcher's defense. But I mean, on Friday's game, three tackles on three consecutive kickoffs. He had a sack and a quarterback hit. He's just everywhere. And I brought it up last episode. He is going to get playing time this year. Significant, I'll say significant playing time, because one of the biggest faults in Steve Spagnuolo's defense was the fact that he overworked his starters. And it is, I'm not even going to say good, I'm not going to say comforting, it makes me ecstatic to know that James Betcher puts his men in the best position to succeed. And guys like Kerry Wynn, who have shown time and time again that they do have the talent, are going to get opportunities, not just on special teams, but to get into the backfield and on different blitz packages, whether it be in a 4-3, a 3-4. Kerry Wynn's a guy that we're going to see out there. And I hope that he's a guy that can finally emerge in the regular season after already proving himself in the preseason numerous times.
Yeah, that's a really good point about just the difference between Betcher's defense and Spagnuolo's. I feel like with Betcher's defense, everything he does makes sense, and everything right. he does is done for a reason.
Whereas he's not dropping defensive tackles
in
the coverage.
Yeah, exactly, and just overworking his players. And I think that what we've seen so far, especially from the run defense, because, I mean, the secondary has still been pretty leaky, and especially covering tight ends.
Yeah, we'll get into Alec
Ogletree.
Sure.
Yeah, but no, I think Kerry Wynn, hopefully he can make an impact this year. And just like other reserve guys like Avery Moss, Romeo Okwara, the Giants have kind of a good
Josh Morrow had one hell of a rush. Lorenzo Carter basically should have had a sack. Fucking referees don't know what they're doing, but they'll figure it out,
But it's interesting because when the offseason started and the preseason started, my biggest concern was pass rushing depth, but mostly because I hadn't seen a lot, like an extended look at a lot of these guys in past season with Spagnuolo. But now that they're getting an opportunity to kind of showcase what they can do in sub packages and just on passing downs, the Giants may have more quality depth than a lot of people, including myself, had accounted for going into the season. Obviously, Olivier Vernon, who has looked unbelievable this preseason, is still the big ticket name who's going. Yeah, I mean, he could be in line, and you pointed this out, for 15 sacks. He's going to be a monster this year. But having those complementary pieces around him, I think, can help open up this defense and maybe make up for some of the shortcomings in the secondary.
Yeah, and especially now you brought up a few names in the pass rush game, but if you look at who got sacks, who registered sacks against the Lions, Olivier Vernon, Kerry Wynn, who we just mentioned, Lorenzo Carter, who we just mentioned, Romeo Okwara had some edge pressure. B.J. Hill, unreal. He looks like one hell of a steal in the draft. Josh Morrow looked good. Obviously, the Giants won't have him for a few games due to his suspension. But you bring up a good point that Olivier Vernon, he's going to feast in this defense because, and I don't want to say he's not going to be, you know, responsible for run defense. Of course, he's going to be responsible for run defense. But one of the things, at least in Spagnuolo's defense, that I'll say it's one of the few things that I appreciated was how good JPP and Olivier Vernon were against the run. Now you add in Snacks, you add in Tomlinson. You're putting Olivier Vernon in more of a position to succeed as a pass rusher. And to add on to that, the fact that the Giants already have a good run defense, I mean, they gave up 50 yards on 33 carries to the Cleveland Browns. Against the Lions, they only gave up 67 yards on 22 carries. So that's 3 yards per carry. And the Lions' longest run, only 7 yards. So while they do have, you know, some concerns, we'll get into Ogletree about covering linebackers out in the flat, covering running backs out in the flat and running backs who catch the ball and maybe even tight ends, you know, in the slot, the run defense is going to be like we saw in 2016. I'm not saying that they're going to return to 2016 form, because at the end of the day, I do believe that them being that good was an anomaly, but we're going to see, I'll see some more positive regression to the 2016 run defense, which is going to put guys like Lorenzo Carter, BJ Hill, and even Kerry Wynn and Olivier Vernon in position to succeed more as pass rushers, especially in James Betcher's blitz-heavy defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And just having the run defense back to being where it was a couple years ago is huge. I mean, we talk about all the time how killer of a schedule it is, but they open up versus Leonard Fournette and Zeke Elliott. And yep, being able to kind of, I don't want to say neutralize, because it's tough to completely neutralize those guys, but to be able to go into that game, those games, game planning around it, and having like just a coherent game plan to stop them, and by, you know, not having to do anything crazy, I think is huge for this team. So been very happy with the way the run defense has come along, even though it's like kind of unsexy stats and people love sacks and interceptions. Run defense, when you're stopping the run, it's great.
Yeah, you want to give that the opposing offense that second and long, third and long, make things difficult. And you bring up Zeke and Fournette, it's not only two top running backs, you're going up against two top offensive lines, and if you can, I'll say, beat them, you got two average to mediocre quarterbacks playing behind those lines. If you can get to those guys and rattle them early and prove that you can stop the run, and then on those second and longs, third and longs, send some pressure, you know, we're pretty bearish on how the Giants are going to finish the season, especially with how difficult their first half schedule looks. But they might surprise some people and at least keep these games close if their run defense is as good as they've looked in the first two preseason games.
Totally agree.
Let's talk. All right, let's just get this out of the way. Alec Ogletree. Now, again, I was a guy who was thrilled with the Ogletree trade. They needed a rock at linebacker in the middle of the defense. He has been far from a rock so far this preseason. He's been exposed tremendously against tight ends, mostly against running backs. The Giants are going to have some coverage issues. Now, talk about how good the run defense is and how it's going to help the pass rush. Pass rush is really, really, really going to need to be good to help alleviate the concerns at linebacker in terms of coverage, because if they're not getting the guys in time, man, you just hit a running back open in the flat, he's gone. It's going to be tough. I mean, even a guy with Ogletree speed, there aren't that many linebackers in the league who are capable of covering running backs one-on-one. I mean, we saw Wayne Gallman expose the Lions linebackers on his touchdown. He ran basically an identical route that Theo Riddick ran against Alec Ogletree. But man, there are some concerns, especially because, and we'll get into this a little bit after the linebacker talk, there's been really nobody that has emerged in that second safety position.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, the Ogletree coverage issues are so concerning. And all right, you want to, if people want to say, well, against the Browns, David Njoku is an athletic freak, so maybe that won't be, and Theo Riddick is probably one of the, if not the best receiving back in the game, but still, the concerns are still there, and they're very easy to expose, and teams are going to go into games and pinpoint that. I do have a hot take, and this is probably just because he's one of my guys from the U, but I think Ray Armstrong may be a candidate to kind of deal with athletic tight ends and running backs, so the team isn't always using a safety or a corner. He's an ex-safety in college, made the transition to linebacker in the NFL, but he's definitely probably the most athletic linebacker on the roster.
The Deion Buchanan of the James Betcher defense, if you will.
It's possible. He's not like built like a linebacker. He's still pretty, like, he's more built like a safety, and I think that he definitely has the athleticism to kind of pick up the pieces where Ogletree may just fall apart entirely. So, and I think that's what's going to keep him on this roster. That and special teams is pass coverage ability, because who else on the roster is really capable of doing that? So hopefully he can make the final 53 and play a big role in passing downs, kind of like a Keenan Robinson role, if you will.
Sure. Outside of that, you know, front three or four, depending on what look they're giving, obviously looks great. Linebackers got some concerns. No one's emerged in that second safety position, and it's worrying that, you know, Andrew Adams, Pro Football Focus says he's got a 79.9 grade, which is the fifth highest among safeties after 2 weeks of the preseason with a minimum of 50 defensive snaps, yet he's playing with the threes. What do you make of that?
Yeah. I don't, it's so strange because he played so well in 2016. Yep. And I don't know what, if he did something to fall out of favor with, you know, the front office or whatever it is. But I think more of what it is, hopefully, and from kind of the stuff I've seen, is that I think James Betcher just kind of wants to roll like a three safety rotation, which I don't like. But I mean, if he's going that way, or maybe even four with like Darian Thompson, Curtis Riley, Andrew Adams, and then William Gay, even, it's just, it's like you said, no one stood out. And it's just so peculiar that the Giants went into this offseason hoping that Darian Thompson could take a step forward. He hasn't so far. Went in with Andrew Adams, this guy who's played a lot of snaps, a lot of meaningful snaps. He hasn't really, you know, separated himself from the pack. And Curtis Riley, who got injured, but is, I think he's back playing again. He's kind of been the guy who's taken the lead on that, which is something I didn't expect, that's for sure.
Yeah, he played 22 snaps against the Lions, which was, you know, a hefty majority in terms of the other defensive backs. You know, Eli Apple, Janoris Jenkins, Landon Collins only played 17 to Curtis Riley's 22. Again, I mean, you made a good point. Like, we saw what he could do in 2016, and, you know, we're not there in camp. We're not there at practice. He's getting buried, and I don't know why. And I'm just, at this point, I'm out of answers, and I'm just praying that someone emerges.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, who are they going to keep four? Like, what are they just going to sneak Will Gay on as a corner, and then maybe they can even out the roster? I just don't. It's such a crowded position, and I feel like it shouldn't be. But I mean, I'm kind of out on Darian Thompson at this point. So I do think that Andrew Adams is probably the guy who needs to step up for this defense to be as good as it can be.
Agree. Anything else on the defense?
No, I mean, Janoris Jenkins looks like he's back to being Janoris Jenkins, yep, which is good. Eli Apple still so inconsistent. I just hope that his psyche this year is better than it was last year, but they need him to step up. Yeah, and I need to see more from Dante Dion, but he just needs to stay healthy, man.
Let's talk Giants Jets, the Snoopy Bowl. By the way, I will not be jiffing for this game, so go follow Ryan at Ryan Dizdeer on Twitter. If you're not following him already, you should be. My parents decided to have their co-60th birthday party Friday night, so I will not be watching the game. Or maybe I'll have it on my phone, although I'm sure I'll get yelled at by my girlfriend or a family member. But we'll see. We'll see. Now, the thing that I'm – and this is very selfish of me. The thing that I'm hoping for the most is that either one of Davis Webber, Kyle Auletta drastically outplays Sam Darnold.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That would be – ideal, because I mean, not only is this a Snoopy Bowl, but depending on if Saquon plays, is also Rose Bowl Redux.
Yes.
Obviously, two of those players, and they're going to be linked forever, whether they like it or not.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, Darnold looked really, really good in week one. He looked excellent. And then week two, he kind of looked like the guy that everyone said needed more seasoning before he can start an NFL game, and he came back down to earth. And I don't know if that's a factor of practicing against Washington for a week, but I'm interested to see what he does. But yeah, if Webber let it go out and just outplay him, that would be best case scenario.
At least for my mental health, because then I could just start talking trash to all the Jets fans that I know. It's not even anything personal. It's just a bragging thing. Outside of Davis Webb and Kyle Auletta, making sure that Patrick Omame and Eric Flowers can block someone. Let's see if Alec Ogletree can successfully cover a running back in the flat or in the slot, and seeing who can emerge as that second safety.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the offensive line point you made was terrific, because, I mean, it's called the dress rehearsal. This is where the starters get most of their work. This is going to be the best indicator of where the Giants are from an offensive line standpoint. So, and I mean, I could be incorrect, but pretty sure the Jets still have one of the better lines in the NFL, or at least the AFC, you know, guys like Leonard Williams. So hopefully they'll be able to do something, because otherwise it'll be a long season. And I'm pretty sure last year's game was really exciting. I think it was like 41-38 or something like that.
High scoring.
And yeah, these games are usually fun, so it'll be a good one.
Yeah, outside of that, no injuries, and let's see if Odell gets any snaps in. Although I don't think he needs it, nor should he, but you never
Correct,
know. Every coach is different. All right, cool. Let's get into some questions. Let's see if we have anything good in the mailbag. It's from Andrew. Expectations for Cody Latimer.
I think that he can do more than what Roger Lewis has done. I think he is definitely...
Yeah, it's like being the tallest midget in the room.
More consistent hands for sure. I think that he will do a lot on special teams. Could even maybe give him some looks as a return man. But I don't know. The way he left Denver, I think that there was a lot of untapped potential there. And I think coming in as a third receiver, I think he has a chance to maybe finish with like 500 yards and 3 touchdowns, something like that. Like nothing groundbreaking, but I think a productive piece as a complimentary like backside option for Eli Manning.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have really no statistical expectations for him. He's just going to be a big body. He's going to be someone that you can throw the ball up for, and he'll come down with it. I don't have any wild expectations. I think the expectations I set for a big body like Brandon Marshall Brandon Marshall's Brandon Marshall way too high. But the fact of the matter is the Giants have a lot of weapons. Like Odell, Engram, and Saquon are going to get most of the looks. After that, it's going to be Shepard, and then, you know, Latimer's down there. So, if the Giants are in the red zone, they want to throw it up, they can go to Engram or Latimer. Hell, even Odell can get up there. So, my expectations aren't high. I expect him to be a quality player, but in terms of numbers, I'm not expecting anything too crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk fantasy for a second. How many leagues are you in?
I'm in 3, I think, and every year I say I'm just doing 1, and then I get roped in. Same. So I think 3. Yeah, it's all.
How do you guys choose draft order?
So we just do, we pick numbers, but I have friends, my one friend, his group is ridiculous, and they were like, oh, let's all choose a company and invest in that stock and see how they do. And I just told my friend, I was like, you need to get new friends, man. That's terrible. Like,
I love that, actually.
Overcomplicating things is the worst, I think. I think like choosing a golfer in like the Open is pretty cool, but
yeah,
you know.
I want to do something fun. My fantasy commissioner left a comment on our question page or our question tweet. There's a NASCAR race. It's actually a truck race on Sunday, and we want to just choose random cars and then use that to determine the draft order, because we always just do picking a number out of a hat like 10 minutes before the draft. That's boring. I don't like that. I'm sick of it, and I want to change it up, whether it's picking a golf or a horse or a car. The best one I saw was on Reddit, actually. Everyone drew Super Smash characters out of a hat.
Oh, I like that.
And then set up a bracket tournament that was all computers. And then they just got wasted and rooted for their character whenever they were playing.
That's pretty interesting. You could even do that with like Madden or 2K. Exactly. I like that one. One's good.
So, Jason, enough with the hat. We're done with the hat. Let's let's do something fun for a change. Phil asks, who's scoring more football this season, Ethan or Jon Stewart? Me. Yeah, it's got to be me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This is from the John Mara, Emperor Mara parody account that follows us. do you think that Dante Dion or Travis Rudolph can realistically make the final roster?
Dion, yeah.
I mean, he's just undersized, man. Could he make it? Like, yeah, maybe as like a backup slot cornerback, but like at the end of the day, he's just too undersized to make a meaningful roster move.
I agree, and there was someone the other day who was telling me like how he's going to be such an X factor, and I was like, bro, like I weigh like a cheeseburger less than Dante Dion. Like his size just isn't sustainable, I think. But I am absolutely rooting for him, and I think he could sneak on as the last corner.
He's a size liability. You know, he's a matchup nightmare in the opposite way. You just get any big bodied receiver against him in the slot, it's the lights out.
Yeah, or like any physical receiver even, so we'll see.
Last one from Tim. Will Hernandez make the Pro Bowl as a rookie? I say no. I just don't think the line around him is talented enough to mask any of the rookie mistakes that we might see.
Yeah, the only way
I could see but I mean, Pro Bowl is a stretch.
The only way I can see him making the Pro Bowl is if he like just kills someone with a block, and then post game he has a great quote, and then he becomes really popular, because for offensive linemen it's popularity. So,
this is a good one that literally just came in from Jared. God forbid, but say Soldier goes down with an injury during the season, how fucked is the offensive line / offense, and what do you think the starting five becomes?
Oh my god!
Okay, here we go. Ready? If Soldier goes down with an injury, the New York Giants starting offensive line becomes Eric Flowers, Will Hernandez, Brett Jones, Patrick Omame, Chad Wheeler.
And the level of
I'm sorry if
disaster,
I just gave you nightmares.
Like, 100. If you've ever seen the Titanic,
yeah,
that's the Titanic. That's terrible. My God.
Maybe Pat Shermer was right. That's it. You got anything?
No, that I think that wraps it up.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Again, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Diz at Ryan Dizier. He'll be Jiffin Friday. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Check out the blog, GothamSN.com, and visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/GothamSN. $1, $2, anything helps, and you can win the jersey of your choice. And check out the mid-roll sponsor for today's episode, posterburner.com/GothamSN. Get 10% off a really, really, really nice poster, guys. I promise, I went through the ordering process. Took me less than 5 minutes. Beautiful poster. Get something nice for that new apartment, posterburner.com/GothamSN. We will speak to you guys next week.